Thank you very much. Good afternoon. First of all, I would like to thank the Chila Institute, especially Mrs. LaRouche, for this invitation. I must say it's my first time, actually, to get the chance to participate in this kind of very interesting exchange. Don't blame me, because so far I have been used to political and diplomatic meetings. And it's very, very interesting to have the opportunity to hear another narrative and contribute in this sense to development discussions. I think the reason why we are, first of all, I would like to mention to the interpreters that there have been some changes, some little changes in the document. So I have edited the document during the past day. So sorry about this little headache, last minute headache. Well, I would say the reason why we are exploring the role of nuclear energy in development is very simple. I think we all agreed here that the world has reached a point whereby we need a shift of paradigm, and the international community should work genuinely together to make sure that the core values under which the United Nations was created still prevail. These values are the freedom of fear, the freedom of want, the freedom of speech, and the freedom of belief for all human beings. So, as we all can see from all what is happening in the world today and in developing countries especially, I could not emphasize more than what has been said earlier, that there is an increase of security and political instability and rampant poverty in developing countries. Lack of perspective and rejection of the establishment by many people result in global uncertainties that could be witnessed through unforeseen wave of humanitarian immigration, terrorism, and so on. Fact is, international peace could not be guaranteed if there are many left deprived. Countries must develop to become self-reliant. And either we strive to survive together or we will sink together. It is therefore time to explore realistic alternatives in international development policies that work. But there could be no development without energy. So, as we all know, energy plays a critical role in economic and social development. In fact, there's no way to alleviate poverty if there is no sustainable energy supply. Energy contributes to improving social conditions, including health, education, food, and decent living, and economic development, which includes private sector development, investment, employment, industrialization, innovation, etc. Yet, many people are still not able to meet the energy. Many countries, are still not able to meet the energy demand needs placed on their countries, and thus incubate the necessary conditions that would trigger effective development and alleviate poverty. I'm quite sure that many of you have raised your eyebrows out of surprise when you read nuclear energy and developing countries as the title of this presentation. I would not be surprised, because most often these two terms seem to be considered as an oxymoron. By the way, I will share with you something that always amused me while working at the IAEA. When I had a chance to meet with people and discuss about development issues, they were so enthusiastic until I tell them, oh, by the way, I work in nuclear business. And then they reacted as if I was suddenly radioactive, you know. So, but this all has an explanation, and I think there are three major points that I would like to highlight here that will help actually make you see things differently. So, why are we talking about nuclear? Why am I bringing this topic, nuclear in developing countries, the contribution of nuclear in the development of a number of countries? There are three major points that I've realized through my experience so far. The first point is that so far, international development agenda have not succeeded to propose energy policies and implement policies that are up to the energy needs demand of some countries. There are many initiatives that have been taken by the international community in that area. You know, you have the sustainable development goals, you have the Millennium Development Goals, and now you have a number of initiatives in terms of helping countries to develop and helping countries to put in place their national sustainable national energy policy. But so far, we don't have a concrete successful example where such policies have worked. And what I would like to emphasize is that such policies have so far promoted the development of the so-called traditional energy sources. And by doing so, there have been some kind of piecemeal support that was brought to member states in terms of, you know, by establishing, let's say, by constructing a little plan in a village here and there, you will not really, this is not a sustainable way to propose a solution on energy problems to countries. The second issue that we have here and that forces us to explore other options is that we see that energy demand is increasing with population growth. So we have now 1.4 billion, from what is being assessed now, 1.4 billion people still lack access to energy, and most of them in developing countries. So, and we know according to the United States, United Nations world population growth, population will increase from 6.7 billion in 2011 to 8.7 billion by 2035, posing another stress on and increasing the demand on energy. So these are facts that we should actually have in consideration. So if nowadays countries are not able to meet the energy demand for their population at this stage, what will happen if, you know, drastic solutions are not taken by 2013? So these are critical figures that we should have in mind. And what will make it even more complicated is that over 70% of this increased demand is expected from developing countries, led by China and India especially. So, but what is very strange is that in Africa, in regions like Africa, for example, where the energy need is very dire, we realize that energy poverty does not reflect the natural resource potential in many countries. So, as you know, Africa is well endowed with many natural resources: oil, gas, coal, sun, water, wind, uranium, etc. And we know that all these, I mean, these resources can actually help meet this demand, but there are still some problem, and nothing is happening. And I have just specific example here, which is indeed a paradox. For example, we have in Democratic Republic of Congo, only 9% of the population have access to electricity, whereas the country has a huge hydropower potential. Nigeria, for example, as one of the top oil producer countries in the world, a member of the OPEC, could only supply energy to 55.6% of his population. And it goes further for countries like Niger or Namibia, countries that are fourth or fifth world leading producer of uranium, but only 14 and 74% of their respective population could have access to electricity. So there are some lessons, and there are some there are some issues we should learn from all this. So the third point that I would like to bring up that forces us to this change of paradigm is actually the environmental, the new environmental agreements that are considered now as an additional challenge for countries' development. So, as you all know, recent debate, we have the issue of climate change, and recent environmental disorder has been again discussed as the retaliation of both human and natural footprints, and I mean devastation and environmental catastrophe were actually assigned to this different change. So the need to urgently curb the greenhouse gas emission trend has gained an international clamor and call for greening the economy. And this call has seemed to reach a point of no return. But as you all know, are all countries ready to embrace to embrace all this evolving change that have a huge consequence on countries' national policies and effort to development? So what we realize now is that renewable energy, except nuclear, are proposed as alternative clean energies, which is a good thing. But we realize that there are several financial and investment incentives nowadays on energy development are actually directed toward that form of energy. So, and which call upon developing countries to focus preferably on, you know, the one that we know, like solar energy, geothermal, wind power, and so on and so on. But what we realize is that at this time, what has been proposed, we have realized that energy, renewable energy alone, could not solve the energy problem of developing countries. So we need, again, to think about other solutions. So now, when we come back to nuclear, in all these issues, from all these challenges I mentioned before, we know nuclear, for example, back in the 1980s, has witnessed mid of 80s, nuclear has witnessed a kind of glorious years, but now it's portrayed as obsolete, and this option is actually even discarded from every possible discussion on energy debates internationally. So energy is not even, whenever you approach a donor, you mention, if you were a donor, the traditional one we talked to, and I was speaking like this, by the end of my speech, the roof will be empty. So because no one would like to hear what is happening, I mean, even what I will have to say additionally to that. So, of course, there is one thing that happened that did not help the situation. As we all know, the 2011 Fukushima Daiichi accident. Okay, following that accident, you know, there have been, as you all know, many voices raised that were calling upon the end of the nuclear energy era. And these voices could be even heard among, you know, national governments. But we understand the reason, of course, behind this was basically safety issues that are related to this technology. But I believe beyond safety issue, there is one more particular reason behind this, was the culture of fear, you know, that is nurtured around this topic by government, media, scientific community. And as you all realize, it is more sexy or trendy to depict the worst side of nuclear than his advantage. Let's take an example. How many articles have you read when it comes to nuclear that will tell you what nuclear can do to improve development? Whenever there are some articles, you will see that, okay, the world will come to an end because this reactor has done this, because safety issues have done that. There is a lack, there is a need to raise awareness to people so that they have the, let's say, the knowledge, the necessary knowledge to have a realistic assessment of a technology, of this technology. And this is why this debate is really important and, timely today. But out of all this, what I can say is that reality on the ground is different. And this media will not tell you that, you know, and no one will explain to you that concretely nowadays there is no real other energy alternative that could replace nuclear energy at the time being, especially in countries that are using nuclear energy. And what we see also is that nuclear energy has so far been proven to be clean and reliable source of energy. This is a fact. This has been already proven. And from the current stand, I don't know if you have any idea about the current figures regarding nuclear. There are about 435 nuclear reactors operational in the world by the end of 2014. And trust me, this figure will, by the decades to come, will double. That you don't know. Media will give you the impression that is the end of the nuclear era, but reality on the ground forces government and the industry to continue in that direction. I will show you how. I will tell you how. I mean, most of this, out of these 435 nuclear reactors in the world, you have 99 in the US, in the United States. You have 58 in France. And you know, France has a, you know, this debate is very, very hot in France. You have 48 in Japan, 34 in Russia, and so on. But the newcomers, China, 23, South Korea, 23, India, 21. This is the current status. And we realize that this has contributed to development of all these countries. So the Fukushima Daiichi accident has a little bit, slowed down the industry, but he has not yet let's say, signed the end of the nuclear era, as I said. But as we can see, there has been a study conducted by the IAEA. I should speed up now. I'm sorry. You know, this is something I also speak with passion, so maybe I'm taking too much time. I will try to speed up. And
if you can conclude, then we can still have some questions.
If there are questions, I will add. So there's a new shift now in the let's say, nuclear business, going from the traditional nuclear, so-called nuclear energy countries, you know, the 33 one, I mean, to the East, East Asia, Middle East, and Central Europe. So major increase in the nuclear energy, nuclear power plant will be witnessed in that country, in these countries. And this is basically the reason, to support their fast growing economies. They have realized, of course, that, okay, working on other renewable energy source help to curb the gas house emission, but it's not enough in their energy policy mix. Nuclear has actually proven to be a viable option for those countries. So when it comes now to countries, to regions like Africa, now I'm skipping. We understand that nuclear energy is a very advanced technology, and please don't get me wrong. My message here is not to say, okay, Africa, we go nuclear. It's just to say the debate so far has been twisted. The option was not even considered. And we had studies, and we have, I am of the opinion that it should be brought back in the debate and actually assessed as one viable energy option for developing countries and regions like Africa. So we have regarding region like Africa, we all know that people will say, okay, Africa does not have the technical capacity to deal with technologies like nuclear, or there are security issues in Africa. But well, from my experience, I have a different opinion, because first of all, nuclear power program does not occur overnight. You know, for countries and regions starting from scratch, like Africa, for example, it takes 15 years to make a power plant operational. What does that mean? If you have 15 years, you have enough time to work on your workforce, you have enough time to develop the resources, if that becomes a priority for countries, and if that is set as an international agenda. Secondly, the paradox about the fact that developing countries, like, for example, Africa does not have resources, is actually wrong, because I'm sure most of you were surprised to see, you know, I am from Cameroon, an African woman standing in front of you talking about, you know, an issue like nuclear, for example, which means we have a very skilled workforce, African workforce in the diaspora, and this African workforce are actually involved in major in all these technology companies, and they can actually contribute to that. Regarding the security issues, it has been discussed earlier here that most of these instabilities that we see in countries are actually triggered by external factors. So if the international community decides to work on the security issues, security shouldn't be a problem after all. So I think I have much more to say, but I will stop here. But I'm very happy to answer a question that may come. Thank you very much for your attention.
Next question.